Before we start this episode, we have a quick message from our sponsors.
If you're studying for the Foreign Service Officer test like us, we have a great study tool for you.
Besides listening to our podcast, we also use FSO Compass.
On FSO Compass, you can find practice tests for every section, comprehensive courses that guide you through the entire application process, and you can even connect with other aspiring U.S. diplomats.
The resources have really helped us prepare, and we hope they help you too. To access FSO Compass and get 10% off your annual subscription, be sure to use the link in our description box.
Good luck!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of How Did We Not Know That? I'm Jack.
And I'm Nat.
And today, Nat will be presenting on, is it Zanzibar?
Yeah, right? I'm talking about Zanzibar and the 1964 revolution. So, super exciting. So actually, my topic today was chosen by our lovely Patreon supporters, patrons. If you become a history hero through Patreon, you get access to exclusive polls where you can choose which topic we cover. So thanks again to all of our supporters. Yeah, so before I go on, Zach, what do you know? Did I call you Zach?
Yeah, you did. It's like, huh, that's a new one.
Oh my god, because I was reading Zanzibar, so Zanzibar plus Jack. Anyway, Jack, what do you know about Zanzibar / have you heard anything?
Yeah, I know it's a country in Africa. Is it located close to Madagascar? I know it's a, is it an island? It's its own island. Okay,
it's an island.
So that's why I think. And I think it's north of Madagascar.
Yeah. Okay, so do you remember, so Jack and I both read the book Silly Isles by Eric Campbell, and Jack was the one who, like, recommended the book. There's a chapter about Zanzibar where he goes and visits during an election time, and it's, like, they have an extreme, like, police state. I don't know if you remember that chapter. It's probably been a while.
I do. That's how I remember where Zanzibar is, because I think I looked it up when I was reading.
Yeah, because I really did not know anything about Zanzibar or, like, what's going on over there until I read that chapter in The Silly Isles, which I know we've mentioned the book a couple times, but it's a great book. I also, okay, just like a random side note, Freddie Mercury, like the lead singer from Queen, he was born in Zanzibar. So like that's like literally like the only two things.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so I wanted to learn more about the island. So just like a quick overview. So Zanzibar is actually not its own country. It's a semi-autonomous territory of Tanzania. So I'll get into that later. But it's a group of islands which are located 40 miles off of the East African coast. And the two main islands of Zanzibar are Unguja and Pemba. And there's a number of smaller adjacent islands. And Zanzibar is a majority Muslim territory, and today it's dominated by a Black African community and has large Arab and Asian minorities. So just like a really quick like early history, like I'm just gonna give the entire history of like Zanzibar in like 2 seconds, but pretty much for 2,000 years, Zanzibar, like the islands of Zanzibar, connected Asia, Africa, and the Arabian Peninsula. At first, the native Bantu Swahili-speaking merchants, they worked as brokers between Africa and the Indian Ocean for trade. So it was just a trading post, bunch of stuff coming in and out. But in the early 16th century, we see like European imperialism. So Zanzibar became a Portuguese territory for 200 years. Later, in 1824, it was settled by the Sultan of Oman, so it became an Omani territory. And once the Sultan of Oman came into power, Zanzibar became a slave trading post for Arab and European countries. And it was also a major exporter of cloves, coconuts, and citrus fruits. There were, like, several plantations on the island fueled by slave labor. And during this time, like, there's hundreds of years of coexistence between Arabs, South Asians, and Africans. But then in 1890, the British arrive and Zanzibar becomes a British possession. It's not technically a colony, but it's still under British control. And just as it did in many of its colonies, the British presence intensified existing racial tensions. Like, we talked about this in past episodes where, like, the British didn't want Zanzibaris to, like, unite and overthrow the British rulers. So they, like, tried to create a lot of ethnic divisions by, like, making people resettle. Yeah.
Similar to other colonies.
Exactly. So, like...
like, British colonialism.
Literally. So it's a whole... it's, like, yeah, it's their whole system. And then, obviously, this affects the islands and all of its colonies for, like, hundreds of years, like, up until today. It has extremely long-lasting effects. And so, flash forward to the 1950s, Africa sees a wave of anti-colonialist revolutions. And then in 1961, Tanganyika, which is, like, today's Tanzania, but Tanganyika secures its independence from Britain. And 2 years later, Zanzibar is also granted formal independence. So Zanzibar, it becomes a constitutional monarchy, and it's ruled by Sultan Jamshid bin Abdullah. But this monarchy was very, very short-lived, because in a few years, there would be a very bloody revolution. So in 1964, this is like the heart of our topic today. 1964, there is a revolution in the island of Zanzibar. And there are several different causes of this revolution, but it mainly has to, its main concern is ethnic tensions. And like many of the underlying issues for this revolution can be seen like through the lenses of race, but it's also like we can't just generalize it and just be like, oh, it's not just ethnic tensions, but that's like the predominant cause.
Yeah, like one of the main components.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, once, like earlier when Zanzibar had become independent, the government was led by the Arab Zanzibar Nationalist Party, also known as the ZNP, even though the predominantly black African Afro-Shiraz Party, ASP, they had won the majority of the votes in the elections, but because of gerrymandering,
Wow, it happens everywhere,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, it's happening everywhere, all across the world, but because of gerrymandering, the ZNP, they gained power, like, they won the election. Okay, so really quick, for those of you who aren't familiar with gerrymandering, it's basically a term used to describe, like, when certain political parties, they outline the election voting districts so that the districts will, like, win on their behalf. So, like, one party will be like, I will draw the lines. And the reason you know, like, the reason you could tell it's gerrymandering is that the, like, the outlines and the shapes of the voting districts are extremely abnormal. So they'll be, like, just super weird shapes. And it's, like, obviously that's not normal. That's, like, not what one person would, like, usually draw. And, yeah, so that's gerrymandering. And so the Afro-Shiraz party was, like, we won the majority of votes. Like, this should be our government. You know, like, we should have won. And another, like, leading factor in the revolution was socioeconomic disparities. So because of historical marginalization and racism, black Africans were generally poorer than the Arab Zanzibaris, and they lived in lower quality housing. They didn't have the equal amount of opportunities as their Arab and Indian neighbors. And so, like, on top of this, so... like, for hundreds of years, they've been, like, disenfranchised and disempowered. And then these elections come around. Finally, they gain their independence. The elections come around. And even though the Black Africans won the majority of the votes, the Arabs and Zabaris still gain power. So people were very upset, obviously. So in this revolution, the Sultan is overthrown. And basically, like, this revolution was seen as the overthrowing of the Arab landowning minority by the exploited Black African majority. Many Arabs were murdered, mutilated, and imprisoned by military groups led by Black Africans who felt disenfranchised and disempowered. And it's hard to get an exact number.
Well, you said mutilated?
Yeah, mutilated. People are, Arabs are, like, rounded up and sent to camps. Women are...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, women are, like, sexually abused. It's really...
Was this in the Scilly Isles book? I did not remember this part in the chapter.
He kind of skips over... That's why, like, when I read that...
I don't remember reading it.
Well, when I read the chapter, I was so confused on, like, the context, because he didn't really go over the history of the island. He kind of just flashed forward to the elections, and I was like, am I already supposed to know, like, the context here? I have no idea what's going on. So then when I'm, like, doing this research...
Yeah, I just remember he was running away from the police. Yeah. He, like, narrowly got out of Zanzibar.
Yeah, literally. So this is, like, obviously horrifying. And it's really hard to find an exact number of how many Arabs died during this revolution. The numbers range from several hundred to 20,000. And many scholars have labeled this revolution as ethnic cleansing with genocidal intent. And historian Jonathan Glassman actually estimated that Zanzibar lost about a quarter of its Arab population. Most Arabs who survived the revolution, they fled Zanzibar, and many would later settle in Oman. And those who did remain in Zanzibar, they resented their loss of power, and tensions between Arab and African islanders exist to this day. So it was never, like, resolved. There was basically an ethnic cleansing, and then no one has really addressed the revolution. Yeah, no one's been held accountable. It's just, yeah. So it's really, there are lots of high tensions to this day. And then, of course, the Cold War had a large influence on this revolution. So Britain and the U.S. saw the events in Zanzibar as deeply troublesome, and they were worried about a possible communist takeover. Some of them even thought that Zanzibar could become the African Cuba, which, like, when we talked about Chile, they were like, oh, it's going to become the next Cuba. And, like, I don't know. We just keep hearing the same thing. Like, everyone's scared of Cuba. But, yeah, so the U.S. Department of State, they actually organized a British military invasion, but this later failed. So the British Army did not invade, but the Department of State was like, let's go into Zanzibar. However... the Department of State did succeed in manipulating Abed Karum, who would become the first president of Zanzibar. They persuaded him into agreeing to a political union with Tanganyika. They didn't want Zanzibar to be completely independent because they were really scared of a communist takeover on the island. The U.S. and Britain actually succeeded in creating a new country, which would be Tanzania, and this country would be led by a pro-Western president without consent from either parties at stake. The revolution led to the merger of Tanganyika and Zanzibar, like I just mentioned, and on April 26, 1964, the United Republic of Tanzania was founded. So now we have Tanzania. The Tanzania is founded, and the main islands of Zanzibar, again, Unguja and Pemba, they're semi-autonomous, and they maintain control over their domestic affairs. So, Like I mentioned earlier, in 1964, Abed Karume becomes the first president of Zanzibar, even though he wasn't directly involved with the revolution, and he led a socialist government. However, by 1972, Karume's socialist politics were failing, and he was losing support from the people. So that same year, he was assassinated. And by the time of his assassination, Zanzibar had already become a police state through the help of China and East Germany, who had helped develop a spying network. So
can you define a police state? What does that mean?
A police state, so obviously there's like huge military forces that use violence against its citizens to like suppress them. Mm-hmm. It also censors media, it like arrests activists and opposition leaders and journalists.
But who's running the police? Is it one person? The government runs the police, so then they call it a police state?
Yeah, it's like the government is running it.
Okay.
So at the time it was Karume's like government was running the police
state. But he just got assassinated. Oh no, another guy got assassinated. Karume got assassinated.
No, he's assassinated. Mm. The first president of Zanzibar is assassinated because the people are like, hey, we don't actually like this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it's still a police state. And even today, although now we see... Okay, so let me just... Let me just transition because... Okay, so if we're talking about Zanzibar today, there is still there's still extreme cases of police brutality. However, a lot of it is coming from Tanzanian police forces. So there's always been, before I get into that, like I just want to mention, there's always been debates over whether or not elections in Zanzibar are free and fair. Many elections have become violent. And it's suspected that Tanzania has a large influence over Zanzibar's elections. And many people, like many Zanzibaris, want independence from Tanzania. So Zanzibar has struggled with extreme police brutality over the past few decades, especially during election times. And we see it significantly in the early 2000s. Which is when, I think this is when Eric Campbell goes to Zanzibar, and that's when he writes his chapter on the Scilly Isles. But in the 1990s, early 2000s, early 200s, Jesus, early 2000s, pretty much every election is just, there's Tanzanian police forces use unrestrained force to shoot, injure, and kill peaceful Zanzibari demonstrators who are protesting flawed elections. Like, also, because, like, during election days, like, police are arresting people and intimidating people. So, mm-hmm. Yes, there's lots of problems that exist today. And on mainland Tanzania, there is strong anti-Zanzibar sentiment. A lot of people are like, why is it semi-autonomous? Like, wow. It should just be part of Tanzania. All right. So in 2017, Tanzanian President John Magufuli threatened to cut off the island's electrical supply if they failed to pay their debt of $54 million. So, like, Tanzania controls Zanzibar's electrical supply. And he was like, if you don't give us the money, you just won't get electricity. Whoa. Which is, like... really awful. Yeah. Like, that's a really awful ultimatum. Especially that's a huge debt, $54 million. Also, another issue we're seeing today is a lot of Islamic separatist groups gaining momentum in Zanzibar. Like I mentioned earlier, there's still strong tensions between Black African Zanzibaris and Arab Zanzibaris. And okay, so like literally right before we recorded, I was like finishing up my notes and this like alert popped up. Last week on March 17th, 2021, Tanzanian President John Pombe Magufuli died due to COVID-19 complications.
Oh wow.
So he, yeah, like this happened literally last week. he had actually announced in June that Tanzania was completely free of COVID-19, and he said he would arrest any journalist who said otherwise. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. But this is a really big deal for the future of Zanzibar, like the future of Tanzanian-Zanzibari relations. Because President Magufuli, he left a legacy of repression and serious human rights abuses. He was first elected into office in 2015. Then he was reelected last year in 2020 through extremely violent elections. His government arrested opposition leaders, activists, and journalists. He censored the media and mobile phone communications, and he blocked all social media. So he was like literally like censoring your text messages or like WhatsApp, any kind of group, any text messaging app. And on the night before the elections, police forces opened fire into crowds of Zanzibaris, killing at least 3 people, which is
very awful.
Yeah. And he just has a whole list of human rights abuses, basically everything you could think of. The article I read, it ended with, like, I'd summarize it, but basically it said that his death leaves an opportunity for Tanzania to make a fresh start and reverse its downward human rights trajectory and ensure accountability for past human rights abuses. So who knows what will happen?
That'll be exciting to
and in Zanzibar.
Keep an eye on and everything. I'm so glad you presented on this, because now we can all, as a little HDWNKT community, keep our eyes out for what happens next in that region, in Zanzibar and Tanzania.
Yeah.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. See you guys next week.
All right. Bye.
This has been an episode of How Did We Not Know That? If you liked it, don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You can also follow us on all social media, including YouTube, at How Did We Not Know That?
If you thought our podcast was low quality, we know. We thought so too. Help us improve the podcast by contributing to our Patreon.
Thank you for listening, and see you guys next week.